You're listening to Dig Deep on KAXE KBXE. I'm Heidi Holton, and joining me is Aaron Brown, our liberal commentator, and our conservative is Chuck Marone. And we are continuing this conversation about solving community problems. We're using your classroom exercise to exercise ourselves, our brains, and we want to kind of start here now on, am I reading this right, in kind of what isn't working about?
Yeah, well, I ended the last segment by saying I think small town America has evolved in terms of isolation to become a little toxic. And that's a powerful word. That's a strong word. Yeah. So I'm going to elaborate on it a little bit. I do planning. I think there's a temptation to look at the whole world through this lens. And so I hope you guys push back on this when I get too deep into this. If we go back even 30, 40 years into the history of the cities in this region, certainly if we go back 50 years or beyond, you had a certain layout of a community where on a day-to-day basis, you could not avoid interaction with everyone around you. You could be a farmer and live out in isolation, and a lot of people did. My ancestors did. They lived on a farm out in Baxter, miles from town, and you can imagine them going long stretches of time without seeing anyone. But yet they were also involved in barn raisings, and I'll come and help you bring in your hay and you come and help me bring in mine. They would still go to church. There's a community there. But if you lived in the city, this kind of lament of there's nothing to do, you know, we're bored, there's nothing going on here. It would have been impossible for you as a young person to go about your day in isolation from other young people. It could not physically have happened. Unless you stayed in your tiny little house, which houses were much smaller back then, unless you were going to stay in your tiny little house all day and not go outside, you were going to run into kids out in the street, kids playing, kids doing things they shouldn't have been doing, you know, kids smoking or, you know, doing whatever. You were going to run into all of this. You were going to run into the soda fountain. You were going to run into the pallets behind the old shed that you shouldn't have gotten into. This was part of being a human in a city. There was this kind of natural cultural churn. And when there were things like the church get together or the potluck or what have you, you're going to bring your hot dish. Those things kind of forced a certain amount of togetherness that today you can avoid easily. And I look at myself as kind of an introverted person who doesn't like social gatherings, not a big fan of weddings. You're crinching up your nose like, who are you, Chuck?
I think it's funny because people always assume, say, hearing you guys, you're talkers. You know how to talk. I know how to talk. But there's also, that's different than
these gatherings.
Yes.
Yeah. For an introverted person, they're just exhausting. They're brutal. Mm-hmm. Here's the thing. I always feel better after I do them, generally. I go to a funeral. I don't want to go to a funeral. If I could avoid a funeral at all costs, I would. I usually come home from a funeral and I'm exhausted, but I'm also inspired. And I'm also like in love with the people who I met.
Glad you went.
Yeah. I feel this deep connection to them. Today, I can go get in my car, pull up the, you know, garage door opener, drive someplace, get out, go do my business with my headphones on, which I am apt to do, get back in my car, drive home and not have any interaction with any human. Someone living in any city in our listening area 50 years ago could not have done that. It just was not possible. They could not go out through the day without that. Boy, I'm glad I had that interaction, even though it wasn't the thing I sought out to do. And I think that that is isolating. I think that is toxic in terms of the level of isolation it creates between us.
I think that's the root of the problems we've been talking about here, isolation from one another, whether it's through the way our towns, you know, are, the fact that, you know, we often live in towns that are emptier than they were 40 years ago because fewer people live there, literally. But I want to know what's going on in the pallets behind the old shed, though, Chuck.
Oh,
that sounds awfully specific.
I think about a hypothetical example. Yeah, no. I just think about like going. You know, you got a whole bunch of stuff behind, the trash that they threw out.
Yeah,
and
I used to
rifle through it. Yeah, and cause trouble. You know,
it sounded like a personal Chuck story.
It sounded like a Chuck story. That's all. It's all right. Yeah. So, I totally relate with what you're saying there, and think it's at the core of what we're doing. I'll give you an example from my parenting world. I'll probably get in trouble for sharing this, but I have three boys. They are middle school aged, all of them, and particularly the younger two, the twins, they're 11, almost 12. They love to play this game called Fortnite. And I'm not going to, if you're a listener and you don't know what that is, I'm not going to tell you. I'm not going to make you learn it. It's a video game. And one of the things about it, like a lot of video games, is you can play with people in different places, not just on your home screen, but you can play online. And actually, there's a talk feature where you can talk physically with the people. Now, we don't let them go out on the internet and play with random strangers, you know, so don't write any letters, please. But we do allow them, our sons, to play with their friends in this way. And what we realize is our boys growing up, when they did, they didn't have a lot of experience talking on the phone, a lot less than I did when I was calling my friends to set up times to go over. And we live in the country, and I know, Chuck, you used to live in the country, and so there's kind of a sense of it's harder to for kids to see their friends, especially we live 27 miles from town. So and they happen to make friends, dang it, with kids who live outside of town the other way.
Yeah.
You know, so they're actually like 45 miles from some of their best friends. So they've been playing with their friends on these video games and talking to their friends, mostly about the video games, but also a little bit about school or other stuff. And we made the call to let them play a little bit more than we otherwise would when they're doing this, because
they're having a dialogue.
Dang it, they're actually talking to kids. Right. You know, they're talking to people who aren't us. And they're talking a little bit to each other, as opposed to going in their own rooms, which does happen sometimes. And each of them, in isolation, plays a game on their whatever device they have. And that we try to limit, because I don't know that that's good for them, isolation, like we were talking. But in a weird way, that is how kids are relating. But then you come to be an adult, these 18, 19, 20-year-old students that I see, and I remember being that age, and you're more than a kid, but not much more than a kid at that age, and you're trying to figure things out. And when your experience is limited to that, or even less than that, you know, you're going to look out and say, well, none of this stuff that I'm seeing relates to me. And the notion that you could just do what a lot of people used to do, go play a pickup baseball or basketball game, we used to cruise. I was in the last generation that would cruise Howard Street and Chestnut Street and Virginia and Hibbing. And you know, you'd see your friends. This is before social media. So you couldn't just see where they were online. You had to go find them either with a telephone that went to their parents' house, which is where they weren't, or you had to go out and find them out wherever they hang out, you know. And so I think, but it's not just kids, it's adults too, who are experiencing the same thing.
It's interesting to me because I think a lot of people would think that they were not isolated.
That's the crazy thing. I think
you're connected to more people.
You're connected to more people. Yes, yeah. Yes. But we've never been more connected. We've never been more alone. And I think that is very true.
It's like having a robot lover.
Yes.
Exactly.
It's exactly like that. That's No, I tell my kids, and there's this part of me, and I don't know if my wife would agree, but there's a part of me that, like, I want you to go get in trouble. You know, not that you're like too good, like they're goody goody two shoes kids, but I'm like, part of figuring out boundaries and what you're supposed to do in life is that, like, you should go out. We moved into town 3 years ago. Mm-hmm. A big part of that move was because where we lived before was just very isolated. I want my kids in a neighborhood with a bunch of other kids out doing things. Last summer, I can count the number of times on one hand that I could get my kids out in the neighborhood hanging out with their friends. For me, that age, I biked into town every day to hang out with my friends in that neighborhood. I think we grew up far more isolated than our parents did. I think our kids are growing up now in a way that is toxically isolated. It literally, my daughter has friends that are two blocks away that she will go weeks without seeing personally. And I'm like, how is that possible? Go out and do things. Like, go out and just, like, I got Stella, the younger one, to go out because I said, you know, you have money. You like chocolate. Four blocks away is a store with chocolate bars. What am I doing as a dad? I'm like, go get your friend and walk to the store and buy a chocolate bar. Like, that's how bad it's gotten. To where these, you know, we can't get people out to do things. We have a park a block and a half from our house, and I love my neighbors. They're kind, wonderful people. We had a little gathering in the park. They got in the car and they drove the block and a half. I'm like, it is literally right. Like, I can stand on my roof and see the park. It's right there. And you got in your car and drove that. That is so reflexive, automatic, like in our behavior. And it's also so ridiculously isolating, right? When you are in your car, you are not interacting with anyone else. Magnify that over everything you do on a day-to-day basis. And it's bizarre that we're functional at all. We are humans made to be cultural interactive creatures. And we have taken and stunted that so dramatically.
And I am watching my students. I see many things that you're talking about. And I don't want this to become the kids these days.
No.
Because it is not the kids' fault.
It's the adults very
much. It is not. Yep. That is the thing that I walk away with every day when I go to work, is that the young people I meet are products of our society. And that is, and so am I. And what's wrong with me is, you know, the same as what's wrong with a lot of people. So I'm not making this about that. And I have no like, oh, we should go back in time to a specific time in history and just recreate that. I think what we have to do is a little different. Maybe we'll get into that. But I'm really interested to see, you mentioned how you wish, your wife said they wish the kids would get in a little bit of trouble sometimes.
I said that. I don't know if she would agree.
Maybe I didn't want to put words in her mouth. I find, because I work with students, like I am a student senate advisor, and so like the students, I give them a tremendous amount of independence because many of them are adults, and it's just the nature of things is I often let them go on, you know, to meetings in the Twin Cities or something on their own just to, you know, to get the experience of doing that. But students are, and maybe I've limited sample size, but students are pretty well behaved. And actually, they're actually finding that in the research is that things like
premarital sex is down,
drug use against kids is down, drugs, alcohol among kids are down. Doesn't mean there aren't drug and alcohol and whatever problems, but I think that's an outcropping of the isolation and the desperation and the feelings that come from that, and the fact that once you try it, you know, it becomes a solution to that problem.
There's a big difference, and I'll say this as a non-drinker. There's a big difference between drinking at a bar and drinking alone. It's a big difference. And
testify.
I think, I think we've created a culture where you don't go out for a drink after work. You drink alone. And
That's a recipe for addiction because it becomes like a medicine that you take. And in some cases, especially with like opioids, it literally is a medicine that you take, and maybe you took it for a legitimate reason and it became something you got hooked on. You know, that's what we talk about opioids in rural America. That's what that is. That's what's happened. And quite often it's people who, they have medical problems. They also have societal problems. And then this becomes something that just takes over their lives. And anyway, I don't know that you can necessarily, you know, put one, you know, picture or name on how all that works. But relating back to the kids, I'm really interested in my job. Kids, they're adults, but I'm really interested to watch how young people are smashing up against this strange world that we've made for them. And are actually breaking out and trying and becoming fascinating, interesting, exciting people in their own right. And that's what I live for in the work that I do, is watching the students do that. But they have to work at it so differently than I did, or that certainly people my parents' age or grandparents' age did. It's just different. And and I think that's when we talk about, and that's what generational conflict always is. It's not that the desires or the wants are all that different. It's just that the societal structure and the technology and the things that you do are a little different, and that can make it seem like it's a totally different thing. But people, I think, want connection, just as people 100 years ago would have wanted connection. But the means of getting it are there, and so maybe that's what we want to look at, is the idea of, well, how can we create that? You know, how can we solve the problem.
Chuck, I know approximately where you live. I don't want to be weird to you here, but I was thinking about...
It's okay.
You know,
I live very near Gregory Park in Brainerd.
Yeah, yep. And so I lived out of town, but I went to Franklin Junior High, and I was thinking about this because I'm imagining this chocolate store you're sending your child to, but, you know, on a Friday night, and I was a kid who didn't get into trouble and had good grades and stuff, but, you know, I'd get dropped off on a Friday night, and we'd get to go to the movie theater, the Twin Theater, and then we'd maybe go to Tower Pizza, and we'd play video games, but we would see all these people. And granted, we didn't really get into much trouble, but there was more of a, like, it was okay with my parents if I was just walking around those neighborhoods, and they knew where to pick me up. And some of those things are similar. I was playing video games. I was, you know, maybe isolated a little bit, but there's just something that was built in there that is really missing.
So for young people, I think what you're talking about is path towards learning boundaries, learning limits, learning who you are, learning social structures that all go along in that. And you say, I was a good kid, I didn't get into trouble. I was a good kid, I didn't get into trouble. But we did get in a little bit of trouble occasionally, right?
Yeah.
Because we found boundaries. That's what happens. I think the thing about that, and to go to Aaron's point of not wanting to make this, you know, the kids these days, there's an overlay of adulting in that too that is also absent. There's an overlay of adult interactions. When you and I were hanging out at Tower Pizza and going to the Twin Theater, and I'm not glorifying like the Blue Ox Bar, which was a block away.
Right.
But, you know, there was a adulting kind of connections going on there as well.
Yeah, actually, that's probably where my parents were.
Exactly.
And they picked me up right after. Yep. Yeah.
And so there was, and the next day, they would have drugged themselves out of bed with a hangover and brought you to church because that's what you did. Mm-hmm. And there's a certain, let's use the most derogatory term possible. There's a certain forced, compulsory togetherness that small towns used to create that now is largely absent. And I think this is, to me, the most important point. You can go down to the Twin Cities metro area and you can be an anonymous person, or you can be connected to groups and you can go back and forth voluntarily between those kind of associations. And that works for a certain kind of person. And I don't think that makes them a bad person in any way. When we come up to Hibbing, Virginia, Grand Rapids, Brainerd, we look at these small towns. If we are not doing this enterprise together, we're going to be in a lot of trouble. We don't have the slack in our system. We don't have the cash flowing through. We can't afford to be isolated and disconnected from each other. We don't have enough like fallback position. In a sense, living in a small town is a commitment to the people around you because we don't have like an abundance of resources to waste. Our capital that we have amongst each other is like our biggest asset. And we've literally, and I'll say this from a planning standpoint, we've literally created a pattern of living designed to maximally isolate ourselves from each other. And you overlay that with some of the things that Aaron has brought up in terms of like the social interactions. My wife and I started dating when we were 15. I would be shocked and embarrassed to listen to a transcript of our goofy phone calls that we made at age 15 when we're both standing there in our kitchens with our parents, you know, at the kitchen table. Hi, how are you? Good. How are you? What was your, you know, these were dumb conversations, but they were the budding part of, you know, this important structure. We are creating something that we're not, I think, well adapted to. And that either going to mean that this experiment's going to fail and not work, which I think you see some of the unraveling is happening, or we're going to evolve to be different types of humans, or we're going to fix some of this stuff.
So I think our teacher, Aaron Brown here, would like us to, in our next segment, probably talk more about solutions. That's
what
you would say to
your students.
Well, if
you want to complete the assignment, then yes, that would be,
we're good
that
kids,
would be the
so
thing to
do. So of course
do.
We do. Yes. Yep. Mm-hmm.